Ladies and gentlemen, three fiscal year 20 presentation that corresponds to the April-June quarter. Before we start, let me draw your attention to our disclaimer in page 2. The earnings release will be conducted by our CEO Andreas Nauen and our CFO Thomas Spanring. We will finish with a Q&A session. We will take your questions over the phone. And with this, let me hand over to our CEO, Andreas Nauen. Andreas?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for joining this call this morning, where myself and Thomas Spanring, our acting CFO, will take you through the company's results for the third quarter of 2020. This is, of course, my first company earnings call as CEO following my appointment exactly 6 weeks ago. Many of you I've spoken to, or some know me already from my previous job, and from heading the offshore business unit, and here I had the pleasure to present that to you about 2.5 years ago. I'm, of course, privileged to have that opportunity and to lead the company at the forefront of the renewable industry, and as you can rest assured, I'm 150% committed to delivering Siemens Gamesa's full potential and the potential that all the business units have. The coronavirus pandemic continues to shape our results. You can see that clearly. And due to the disruptions that we see in the supply chain and projects or in general in the commercial activity. As we all know, this health crisis coupled with ongoing problems in our company in the Northern European pipeline, the slowdown in the Indian market and the Mexican wind market, they have continued to take a significant impact on the company's results, and particularly the onshore business. I'm under no illusion of the scale of the job that we have ahead of us to successfully turn around our business, particularly across onshore. That is very clear. That is very clear for me and the management team and everyone. But as you will see, we have already taken significant steps to address this issue and work hard to put Siemens Gamesa back where we belong, which I believe is as one of the leaders in the industry. Before turning to look at the important work we have carried out over the last quarter, I would like first to address the area of sustainability. This remains, as ever, at the heart of all what we do in this company, and the crisis has perhaps even sharpened our focus in this regard. First and foremost in these times, we have been implementing enhanced health and safety measures to protect our staff across our global operations against this pandemic. And I can seriously say I'm extremely proud of what we did as a company, how our employees followed everything, and that has clearly helped us to maintain a minimum of staff affected by COVID-19 and also keep our operations working in most places. Over the past quarter, we were also ranked first out of 25 companies in the electrical equipment sector for our ESG performance by Ethical Investment Research Company, which adds to a growing list of sustainable indices and initiatives to which we belong. The crisis has shown also new light on companies which see sustainability as key to their business model. To this regard, we've adapted our ESG criteria to our first syndicated guarantee financing line, which helps to maintain our continued work in this area. So let me give a brief overview of our results for the third quarter. During this period, we've recorded a revenue of around 2.4 billion. You can all read that on the slide. And our EBIT margin fell to -6.7%. which includes a direct COVID impact of 93 million. And over the quarter, we reported a disappointing net loss of 466 million. In addition to the impact of the pandemic, the results were affected by challenges. We explained that also in some of the previous quarters, of challenges we were facing in the onshore business. Then by the severe slowdown of the Indian market, and the costs arising from difficulties in executing projects in onshore in Northern Europe. As I said, the company, we have taken a number of steps since the beginning of the year to return to profitability in the onshore business while maintaining strong performance in offshore and service. I think we must not forget that. Of course, onshore isn't performing at the moment. That is very clear. But we have two very well-performing business units. And the business as a whole still has a very robust outlook. That you can see also from our commercial activity with a new record order backlog of 35 billion, which gives us a significant long-term visibility. And out of this backlog, it's important to note that 78% are in offshore and business, offshore and service. So two businesses that are attractive, that are very successful, that we know how to run, and they have a strong track record. Overall, the company has an offshore backlog totaling 7.6 gigawatts, and then an additional pipeline of preferred supply agreements of another 9.3 gigawatts. So a fantastic outlook. And despite the profitability challenges, the company also retained a strong liquidity position. Thomas will talk about that later, I'm sure. We have 4 billion in financing lines at our disposal, and only 1.2 million are drawn down. And during the last quarter, we have also managed to improve our net debt position, which now is at 90 million. And that is better than in the same quarter a year ago, and even following a payment for the Senvion acquisition. Despite tough times that both the company and the industry is facing, it is also clear that renewable energy is set to play an ever more important role in the world's electricity supply. We are convinced that this will become increasingly the case, and it's, of course, also evident in numerous plans around the globe, such as the EU Recovery Fund, the Green Deal positioning, and also in many other countries in the world. I would like to assure you that our work is well underway to help us to see a successful turnaround of our business, and there particularly onshore. This work will be relentless over the coming month, and one location we must address is India. We are market leader in this country, but the outlook has drastically changed, and now we must adapt to that while maintaining our top position. To this end, we are adjusting our capacity to meet the current market demands. We are also no longer overextending ourselves in this market and will take away considerable business risk by limiting business opportunities to those that are most profitable. This does by no means change our firm commitment to the country, to India, because we see a very, very solid long-term outlook. And in order to be successful in that long term, we also now change our technology in the US, in the Indian market. And in July, we launched a new turbine especially designed for the country's wind conditions. That's the Siemens Gamesa 3.4-145. This turbine will be one of the most powerful in India and offers around 50% higher AEP than the previous model. So we are confident that this, together with our change of business model, will become a benchmark and also will help to meet India's very, very ambitious green energy goals. It's also critical for us to ensure that our global manufacturing footprint capacity is optimized to meet our market demands. Over the past quarter, we took the decision to close our blade plant in Aoiz in northern Spain. And while none of us, I can assure you, is happy at the loss of jobs, the plant is no longer competitive as the markets move towards ever larger turbines, and we must ensure that we see a better balance of our supply chain. Our new plant in Vagos, Portugal, which we acquired from Senvion, is a good example of this rebalancing. And lastly, I will briefly mention our LEAP program, which aims to accelerate the achievement of the company's long-term objectives. We will give more details of LEAP and the company's outlook for the coming years at our Capital Market Day on August 27. But I can tell you that the program will help the company to return to profitability and will also significantly help to reduce risks all across our business, but particularly in onshore, because we plan to improve project execution and ensure that we introduce the best practices across the entire business and avoid the challenges that we have faced this year in Northern Europe. Similarly, the program seeks also to assure our leadership and profitable growth in offshore and service. I would not like to talk long about myself. I've been in the wind business now 16 years, and out of that 13 years I've been the CEO of wind turbine companies, Siemens Wind Power, Repower Senvion. In the last 2.5 years, I ran the offshore business unit here in Siemens Gamesa, and we have clearly driven that organization into a strong market leading position, and we helped that the global offshore industry developed. I believe that we can implement many of the successful ways of working that we did there in onshore, that we also can apply that to onshore and make sure that we are working in the best possible ways across the entire company. That is far to say that everything needs to be changed in onshore, which has a great technology and people to lead the turnaround. So many ingredients are available, but I think we clearly need to improve, and that is my commitment, and that is the drive we will implement via the LEAD program. I will not go further into my personal background. I really love this industry. I think it's a fantastic place to work. I think Siemens Gamesa is a fantastic company, and I'm determined to return to where we belong. This will not be the only management change, and very soon I will also announce management changes in the executive committee. I apologize to you because that I don't do that right now. There are two reasons for that. First, there's one person that will join from outside that has a very important task. And secondly, it's a lot about turning Siemens Gamesa around, and therefore I will share these news first with my people internally and will share them with you later today. I hope you understand why we do it this way. But even though that has been a tough year, and no doubt that we have there's no doubt that we have made also significant progress in many areas. And if you look at the successes that we had, one is in Vietnam. Vietnam offers great potential for wind power development with a coastline of 3,000 kilometers. And according to GBEC, the country had 500 megawatt of installed capacity in 2019, and this is expected to jump to 4 gigawatt by 2025, with 1 gigawatt coming from offshore as the government strives to meet ambitious renewable goals. In the third quarter, we luckily signed two new orders for 165 megawatt in the country and received the largest nearshore contract for 80 megawatt this month. With regards to technology, we also stole many of the industry headlines in the third quarter, having launched the largest turbine in the offshore segment, this SG14-222 direct drive. This is the culmination of much work across the business and will help us to maintain our market-leading position. Indeed, we now have a 4.3 gigawatt pipeline for the product that can produce up to 50 megawatt and comes as offshore works towards liftoff in the United States, as well as robust growth seen in other markets of interest, such as Taiwan and the now well-established UK market. Our service business has also maintained momentum in the third quarter and secured a 200 megawatt deal to service offshore Senvion turbines. Following the acquisition of selected Senvion assets, we have now added 557 megawatt in further service supply agreements for Senvion turbines across the world. Thanks for your attention, and now I would like to hand over to Thomas, who will give you a deeper dive into our commercial activity over the last quarter and analysis of our results.
From a commercial activity perspective, what we may report in the third quarter, and we may move to page 10, we have closed the quarter from an order entry perspective with 5.3 billion, what is a record high from a quarterly perspective, and certainly with all expectation will support the company to close out the total fiscal year also with a record high in order entry. That is in particular driven by, as already mentioned, by the offshore developments, and offshore in the quarter contributing here with 3.3 billion of order entry. When we look into the details as well, service was growing also and contributing to our order entry growth from a year-over-year perspective with an order entry of 1.1 billion. And what we have seen as well, we closed the quarter from an order entry perspective and onshore only with 872, what is a reflection of our selected and risk-aware sales process we have adopted within the company to de-risk our business and to be more selective. That in total contributes to a quite favorable composition of our order backlog, as mentioned as well. It is growing. It is on a record high. Meanwhile, at 31 billion of order backlog, and that is then favorably supported by the mix, in particular service, what is the best and the, what is the biggest and with the longest tenor. Also with offshore additionally contributing here and stabilizing the order backlog and with a limited growth on the onshore arena. From a regional perspective, we have extended our footprint in the order backlog, in particular in the area of EMEA, what is in particular due to our well-established offshore business in that area. Having said that, we can move to the next page, page 11, what gives some detailed analysis on the onshore business specifically. What is worthwhile mentioning there, the average selling prices in the last quarter closed out with 0.73, what is slightly lower than in the last quarter. That is predominantly due to, again, scope and mix changes. In essence, the takeaway of that slide is that nevertheless, prices are stable and we don't see any significant adverse development in that arena. What also is good from an order entry perspective that we make further progress with our new 4 megawatt plus platforms, what is the 4X and the 5X, and additionally and further have concluded and stepped into further contracts, in particular in Sweden for the 5X, demonstrating that this frame is a success in the market. We may move forward to page 12. A brief insight into the offshore business, as already mentioned, that is a record high from order entry perspective. We also, beyond order entry, have contributed further to our pipeline, what is important for our future business and grants us significant visibility for future developments and supports our strong market position in that market segment. Major order entry is this quarter in France, what justifies and support our investments we are doing currently in France, in particular for the French pipeline, Le Havre, and as well the pipeline is further extended. A brief statement about the service business from an order entry perspective on page 13. As mentioned, service is further growing year over year. It's a growth in order backlog by 31%. From an order entry perspective, it is quite impressive to see the business growing year over year by 20%. And when we look into the different regions, service is certainly favored by the offshore business and follows the offshore business simply by the regional structure. So we are extremely strong in the EMEA region here as well. What we may say as well, we have concluded the first Zambian offshore asset with 200 megawatt clients, what is quite impressive as well, what supports, again, the prudence, the business decision to acquire the Zambian service business in particular.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas. I will now give an outlook, and if you have a look at page 21, I jumped too far. I would like to give an outlook also at the COVID-19 impact on the long-term growth, and if you have a look at page 14, you will clearly see that in, for example, in the Americas, there's a short-term effect, but it's a very promising outlook. You see that the U.S. business jumps up or the Americas business, and the good thing is also that we have been selected also in the U.S. for a very, very large offshore project, but also we have significant success in the onshore market. Then at the same time, if you look at the at EMEA, one of our core business, 61% of our backlog is in EMEA, and especially with our footprint, with our locations, with our products, we're extremely well positioned in EMEA. What, of course, and I talked about that, gives us quite some work and needs adjustment is the India business. Here, not only did we have effects from COVID-19, we also had effects from a general business slowdown. And also, as I explained already at the beginning, we need to adjust our business model in India. And therefore, there's some restructuring ongoing in India. And then I think it's back to you, Thomas, for the...
So page 16, consolidated group key figures for the third quarter. From a group revenue perspective, we closed the quarter with 2.4 billion, what is, compared to previous fiscal year, down by 8.4%. This is partially predicted, and we come to the details later, by the execution profile, in particular in offshore, but certainly disfavored by the developments in India and in onshore, and certainly also by the Indian market development. I will comment on that one further in detail. EBIT pre-PPA restructuring cost, we closed the quarter with minus 161. That is this, so while offshore and service are performing well and according to our expectation, that is disfavored by certain challenges we have to digest in the Indian market in particular. But certainly, and already mentioned, by 93 million of charges of COVID, which in itself was specifically burdened in the area of Mexico, where jointly with our partners, we have decided to exit certain developments. When we go into integration restructuring costs, what further burdens our net income, we had to report a number of 243 million charges for integration restructuring. The biggest part out of which is a portion of 157 for India. That is in particular due to the complete restructuring of our land bank development. The company has decided to abandon that business activity. Furthermore, we have restructured and abandoned the solar business. On top of it, we have abandoned certain legacy frames not to be continued in the future. And then on top of it, we have decided to adapt our manufacturing footprint as well in India, and that in aggregate brings the 157. Beyond that, also in that number, we have, as already mentioned, communicated with the market and to our employees that we are adjusting our capacity in Europe, what gives us additional charges of 26 million, what predominantly is the personnel restructuring element in it. Beyond that, we are continuing with our Zambian integration, what gives further charges of 11, but are well on track from that perspective as a company. When we look into the CapEx element, CapEx in the third quarter was traded with 151 million, that is 6.3% over revenue. That supports and reflects our investment in our future growth and is already mentioned in particular in this quarter in our Le Havre factory, but also from an R&D perspective in our new frames, the 5X on the onshore, the Mark 5 and Mark 6 in offshore. Important to notice is that we have made further progress in working capital management. We closed the third quarter with a negative working capital of 1.5 billion, what is a year-over-year improvement of 1.7 million, what substantially supports the liquidity of the company. And we can go into the details. Page 17, a few words about revenue. Revenue in the quarter, as already mentioned, was slightly down compared to last fiscal year. That is in particular due to a slower activity in offshore, but that is according to plan. Service is further growing, also supported by the Zambian acquisition, and it's clearly also from a revenue perspective, as always in the summer period, on its growth path. And as mentioned, from a revenue perspective in onshore, we are down. That is partially due by COVID developments, but certainly also by market weakness in other markets like in Mexico. We can go, to stay in time, directly to page 18, what gives some detail, in particular on the right side, in the main drivers for our profitability compared to third quarter last fiscal year. As mentioned, EBIT pre-PPA, we closed out the quarter with -161. From a transformation program perspective, what is worthwhile mentioning then that from a productivity perspective, the company is well on track, and we are clearly able to outperform pricing pressure from the market. So that is a strong positive, and the company is on a sustainable path on that one. We were certainly slightly disfavored by, compared to last year, third quarter, by mix and scope, also by the strong execution in offshore last fiscal year, what is not the case this fiscal year, as already demonstrated. And then when we look into the non-recurrent items that are burdening our profitability in the current quarter, we had to digest certain charges in Northern Europe. What only to a minor extent has to do with the Northern Pipeline. I can talk about that one later. And in India, then the COVID charges and other corrections we had to take from an operational perspective in our portfolio. We can go to page 19, working capital. What are the drivers for the positive development we had in working capital? And you might remember that we were slightly concerned after the second quarter by the imbalances that could be foreseen in the working capital caused by the COVID-19 crisis. We have, as a company, implemented a strict working capital and cash control, and thereby consistently have achieved to improve all our main KPIs, thereby further reducing our working capital compared to the last quarter, what gives an impressive performance compared to last fiscal year. When we then looked, translate that one into net debt, net cash, compared to March 2020, last quarter, we improved our net debt position by 205 million. What, when I exclude the IFRS 16 effect, is a year-over-year improvement of 707 million. What in combination with our financing lines of 4 billion we have in the market and the 1.2 out of that used makes the established a situation and a framework for the company that makes us believe that we are well prepared for any challenges we might be facing in future also from a COVID perspective. Thank you.
Now I would like to conclude first with an outlook and first an industry outlook. I think we all understand and we see that we're going through difficult times, but on the other hand, I believe Siemens Gamesa is one of the strongest players in the industry. And if you look at page 22, simply the outlook for wind energy is outstanding. Of course, it varies a little bit over time and regions, but just the growth in offshore, where we are by far market leaders, will secure our future. And on top of that, I'm very confident that we can turn around the onshore business and can harvest also successes in the onshore business. And I see already that we do the right things, and also the new orders, such as the successes in Vietnam, confirm that. But beyond that, I would like to draw your attention to page 23. I think Thomas explained the effect that COVID and how our numbers for this year are influenced by COVID and also some other factors. If you look at the guidance that we give now for financial year 2020, we believe that our revenue will be somewhere between 9 and 10 billion. That is influenced by around 1 billion from COVID, which is mostly delays. Of course, the industry and we believe that we can harvest some of these projects later. Some of them might come back in 21, others in 22. It depends clearly on the country. Like in Europe, some delays will catch up soon. In India and Mexico, it might take a little longer. But nevertheless, we clearly see that we will end that year in that range.
On the impact on EBIT and pre-PPA, on the EBIT, would be around 200 million-250 million, and that leads us to an EBIT margin between -3% and -1%. Of course, not what we wanted, but it's clear that we have taken the right measures, and from here it's up. Why do we believe that it's up from here? Of course, we have the short-term financial performance impact from COVID and other effects that we described now extensively. If we do the right things that we have started and implemented rigidly, I think we can overcome them. Then the long-term visibility, as we explained, our order backlog, the industry, also the success product launches, whether that's now in offshore with the 14 MW, in onshore with the new 5.X, I think they give us a lot of confidence. Also the acquisition of Senvion, the Senvion assets, whether that is the acquired assets or whether that is winning orders outside of that, I think that was a great addition to our portfolio. I think that gives us a lot of confidence that we can come out of the situation much more successful than we are now. We have taken the measures, and one thing is also very clear for everyone, we have to be one SGRE. The good things that we do in offshore, the good things that we do in service, and if we work together and apply many of these things in the onshore business, I'm very confident that we can turn around onshore and then in total be a successful company. No doubt. We have the strong order backlog, which is an excellent foundation. We have also, as Thomas shared, robust finances. We have leading technology, and our people are also committed to make Siemens Gamesa a winner again. Therefore, I'm confident that together in Siemens Gamesa, we'll make that turnaround a reality and lead Siemens Gamesa back to the top of the industry. Thank you very much for your attention, and I think it's now your turn to ask questions.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press zero one on your telephone keypad. We kindly request that you limit your questions to one per turn. Please be informed that in order to assure audio quality, we recommend that all questions be asked from landlines. Thank you. The first question comes from Gael de-Bray from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Everyone. A few days ago, you appointed a new head of technology for the onshore business unit.
Yep.
I don't want to butcher his name here, but I was interested in his profile. I mean, really, since he spent, I think, 10 years at Vestas before.
Yep.
Looking at Vestas' performance and positioning, what do you think you can learn from them in onshore? How do you intend to change your main technological and innovation priorities in onshore if need be, going forward?
No, thanks for the question. George joined us indeed from Vestas, but he's also done different things. I think he's a good example of the leadership team I believe we need in Siemens Gamesa. There's a lot of course, knowledge in the company, but on the other hand, we also need to add industry knowledge and maybe sometimes even knowledge outside of the wind industry. This is what George brings. He has been extremely successful at Vestas and clearly also showed there how do you industrialize the onshore portfolio. If I look at our own portfolio in onshore, I think there are two main elements that we need to drive. First, it's of course develop winning turbines and very competitive turbines. I believe the 5.X especially is a winner and will be a winner. We see already, based on the feedback and the orders that we get. At the same time, you also have to fully industrialize it and make sure that you can always build it globally most competitively. This is, for example, something I believe George can contribute, but of course not only him alone. I also look forward that he works together with his colleagues in the offshore side, where we clearly have world-class leading technology, and that we learn from each other. That is what I refer to as one SGRE. It's not onshore or offshore. We are one SGRE, and we need to find the best technology for the company in total. And I look forward to working with George and of course also all the good engineers that we already have.
Okay, so are you, I just wanted to double check with you, are you still committed to deliver the kind of 4% margin in onshore by 2022? Still the right time frame to do it?
Yeah, there's of course a lot of, and I described that extensively, turnaround to be done. I think one area I described, India, and India had such a large influence on our onshore performance. Whether we will be exactly at the number that you quote, I think at the Capital Market Day in a few weeks, we'll share more of our strategy in onshore and also of our target ranges. So clearly we are committed to improve vastly the numbers. Whether that's exactly there where you see it needs to be confirmed.
Okay, thanks very much. I'll get back in the queue. Thanks.
Thank you, George.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sean McLoughlin from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I just wanted to build on Gael's question. You talked about more selective growth onshore. Is this just India or where else globally? And how should we think about your growth prospects onshore over the next 2 to 3 years?
Hi, Sean. It's in light of the size of the Indian market, there's of course a lot of adjustment needed for India, and also we need to see when does India as a market start growing again. And we just launched also our new turbine there, which I believe will make a big difference there. On the other hand, we decided, as Thomas described, to do far less, if only a little land bank development and so on. So clearly that will influence our growth overall simply because of the size of India. And it's very difficult at the moment to predict that precisely. But we will also do our approach in other regions will be different. Let's take Northern Europe. Northern Europe, in some areas, there are large projects. That's good for us. But on the other hand, sometimes with a lot of risk simply due to the location, weather. And you've seen, and we experienced that now over the last 5 months of last year. And what we will clearly do is when we approach large projects in Northern Europe, we will learn from the past. We will not take on the same risk. I think we can still win the projects because we have a very competitive product with the 5X, but we will not take on the same risk as we did in the past. And we already submitted recently various quotes for large projects in Scandinavia, and we are well positioned there. So also there we will have a selected approach. Overall, I think also with what you see at the moment, what is done in Mexico, one other important market for us, a complete or very drastic slowdown of the wind developments. And Thomas described that we had to stop our development activity there together with partners that will also have influence. So overall, I believe the growth will be, of course, anyway, way higher in offshore, and it remains to be seen after we get through this difficult phase now, where do we get out in which countries, and that is still to be seen.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Rajesh Singla from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I would be interested in knowing, like, if you can share your views on your long-term target EBIT margins in your onshore and offshore and services, which you think are achievable in next 3 years' time.
And there I would kindly ask for your patience, because this is exactly one of the important information that we would like to share with you at the Capital Market Day.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question comes from Martin Wilkie from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. It's Martin from Citi. Just coming back on the onshore business, I mean, you touched a bit about taking less risk on future projects. But when you look at the existing backlog, you're taking a fresh pair of eyes in that business. Are there concerns on the existing backlog beyond the problem projects that you already have? And is there a review getting instigated? And, you know, does there need to be a backlog cleanup in terms of expected profitability? So that was my first question. Thanks.
So we did, as we always do each and every quarter, but certainly in this quarter in particular, after the additional charges we had in last quarter, we are absolutely risk aware in the northern area. And as reported, the Northern Pipeline projects are closing out quite successfully. We have, meanwhile, three completed, from a technical perspective, fully. Only one over the fiscal year will remain. So that one is progress. And then certainly we had to take minor additional charges out of that portfolio, but only minor. Nevertheless, as we did the profound analysis of our portfolio, In a critical market environment, we had to report additional charges in the third quarter. But do truly believe that this fairly reflects the risk position and the opportunities in our projects.
And Martin, I can confirm that as part of the work that Thomas and others already started before I was nominated, we did exactly what you, I think, are hinting towards. We went through the complete backlog. To see are these projects not safe, do we see additional risk, and this is exactly what you find reflected, or the result of that backlog find reflected in the numbers that Thomas shared.
And the main impact to digest were in the recalibration of the Indian portfolio, what is partly a restructuring element, but also we take a different approach from a customer perspective. We have jointly with our two customers decided to abandon two contracts, so those were terminated, and simply to cut losses in that sense.
Thanks. And then perhaps just a follow-on, again, on onshore. Just from listening to your comments, it sounds like you think the 5.X is technically the right product, but you need to industrialize. So do you believe that any gap that you had on the onshore business is simply a process of kind of industrializing what you already have, as opposed to any more fundamental technology gap from your turbines versus the competition in onshore things?
Yeah, the first thing that we need to make sure that we have now a competitive product before you even decide where to make it, how to make it, that the technology as such, and again, something that we've done over the last few months when we saw the difficulties in onshore, that we did an extremely thorough review of the 5X technology and how far are we with the development? Is that a world-class turbine? And again, something that we did with the experts from the whole company, again, from offshore colleagues, the service colleagues. We also had outside consultants helping us, and the clear result is that this is an excellent turbine. Now we, of course, have to see how do we industrialize and where do we produce it. I think we have clear plans for that. It remains then to be still, we still have to develop certain features and additional elements to make that turbine competitive everywhere. Just to give you two examples, in certain markets in Europe, you need a very, very high tower. We already have a starting portfolio of towers, and some new developments needed for the very high ones. And then also we have to see how can we make that turbine and what type of plates can we use for that turbine in the US market. And these are still two technology developments that we have to do. And on top of that, and we explained that we are also adjusting our general footprint, but the 5X will be a major share of our revenue in the future. And therefore, we put a lot of effort into making that turbine successful again at the moment.
Thanks. That's pretty helpful. Thank you.
The next question comes from Akash Gupta. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Andreas and Thomas. Thanks for your time. I have a question or maybe a couple on offshore. So the first one is on offshore wind development in the U.S. I mean, there are a number of projects lining up on the East Coast, and you have conditional orders or preferred supply agreement for some of those. And with elections on site, how do you see offshore wind market will develop in the U.S., and when do you expect to announce the first firm order from there? And also maybe another one on offshore is that, I mean, offshore orders are lumpy. You had a very strong Q3, which is all-time high in orders. So do we still expect any more firm orders for Q4, or that was it for the year? Thank you.
Yeah, hello, Akash. Nice to see you again, or hear you again. I'm sure we see each other soon. You said the first question was on the U.S. offshore market, and I think you follow that industry already quite a long time. And again, unfortunately, there was a slightly delayed start due to the renewed analysis and revisions on the administrative side. But we clearly see that it starts now. We have just, I think, 2 weeks ago, we installed our first two turbines. And it's, of course, a very small number, but nevertheless, at least it's a start. And you also, we have to learn how to do projects in the U.S. So for me, that is, even if it's a small project, it's an essential project. But of course, more important is the agreement that that we've signed with Dominion on a very large portfolio. And there's still some work to be done because it's a combination of that contract and of course also of developing a certain level at least of local content. We hope of course that this turns into a firm order soon. But as you know, it's the first and really large order that will be signed in the U.S., so it would be, I think, not prudent not to predict exactly when that comes. But it clearly also shows we've offered the Mark VI turbine, our 14-megawatt turbine there, which is a global turbine, and to get the confidence and the confirmation by such a large company like Dominion was an excellent start for us. I think the rest will now, we'll really have to see when also the regulatory things finally get sorted out. But I firmly believe in the U.S. Then you asked about the political influence, and of course, that will make even a big difference. The outlook that we currently have was under, let's say, the current situation and leadership and government. If there is this investment wave that might be coming in the U.S., that, of course, would even increase our prospects. So everything that you've seen and that we show in our outlooks or that also the consultants like Wood Mackenzie's share is, I would say, is clear and expected. It might become more if the government changes. And so the second question was about can you expect further on the remaining? I think this the last quarter, as you say, was an absolute record high for offshore, I think that is already well done for this year, I would say. Let's see.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Rushney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Can I please ask about the offshore wind competitiveness? I mean, you've won some very large or confirmed some very large orders recently and kept your market share at around about 65% on my numbers. You also won the project provisionally from RWE Sofia when your previous chief executive had indicated that, you know, he wasn't going to be successful in the UK auction round. Can you talk about pricing and whether you've seen pricing pressure there or whether you still see the industry to be, you know, robust? and also pulling into pricing, pulling in risk reward, which is also important for some of these large projects.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark, for the question. And maybe you allow me first to say a few words about the SOFIA project. And indeed, as you correctly remember, the first the CFD round last year, we did not win a lot. But one of the winners there was the SOFIA project by RWE. And due to the project development and the time of SOFIA, we were then also given the, let's say, a second chance, and then we offered our latest technology, which finally convinced RWE that we are the right partner to go with. So I'm extremely pleased after, let's say, a disappointing start that we got such a project, and especially from RWE, which will be one of the leading offshore utilities developers in the world. So clearly that is a big success for my people, and I'm grateful for that. Then you asked about pricing pressure and what do we do against that. You might have, indeed, there is of course pricing pressure, also the introduction of auctions in offshore, and you know the kilowatt hour prices from the CFD round. And but we've started already a few years ago two things. One is, of course, a drastic and very stringent cost out, which has now become totally part of our DNA. We have cost out workshops, product conventions, and all the tools that you need to drive your cost down. But you surely have also noticed that in the last 3 years, we introduced three new turbines, the 8 megawatt in the end of 2017, the 10 megawatt, which we then moved into an 11 megawatt only, I think, a little bit more than a year ago. And based on that platform, we then introduced another 14 megawatt. In that combination of a continuous development of our technology, of the scale that we can drive in offshore, and by the way, your 65% are, I think, fully correct. So in the combination of technology and scale, I believe we can compensate that price pressure.
And the main cost drivers in those projects, and thereby keeping our margins intact, is that the balance of plant is massively reducing by the energy output of the turbines. Simply in that combination.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Javier Correonero from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hello. I have one question for Andreas. In your final remarks, you mentioned that if you implement the good things of the offshore division in onshore, there is a lot of room for improvement. So despite the differences between both businesses, I would like to know, what do you think Gamesa is doing worse in onshore than in offshore? Thanks.
If you allow, I would like to talk about the things that we do well, and then you can make your conclusion. I'll give you two examples of, I think, of things that we do well. We know how to manage projects. Otherwise, we would not be successful in managing the large offshore projects. And we have a system in Siemens Gamesa that is called PM at Siemens Gamesa, project management at Siemens Gamesa, which is a toolbox. It starts with the classification of projects, project reporting, risk contingencies, and all of that. And this is something that we need to do in onshore as well. Of course, we have to scale it and adjust it from, because the projects are simply smaller. But the principles you can apply. And this is, for example, one tool and one one tool process that we will install. We will train all the people, and I'm sure then also our onshore project stability will increase vastly. I give you a second example. If you compare the manufacturing of blades, it really, in the end, of course, we make very large offshore blades, we make onshore blades. They are even different in technology, but certain things are completely the same. And you can benchmark them internally, and you can clearly see what does it take to make a world-class blade and how long does it take. And that is what we are currently comparing. We clearly see there's improvement potential in mostly in onshore, but even also vice versa. The offshore people can learn in the factories from onshore. So clearly, if we just do this internal benchmark, there's no consultant, no external benchmarking needed. If we only apply that and move to the best of best internally, that would give us considerable savings. And these are just two very practical examples where you see that we have a lot of things that we can do to improve the onshore business and thus Siemens Gamesa in total.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from Miguel Medina from KC Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just one question. I have noticed in the P&L that you have made some additional provisions for Senvion. I think it's between 30 and 40 million euros. If I recall correctly, at the time of the acquisition, you already booked a very large provision, which was 140 million. And also at the time, it was mentioned that because of the very particular situation in which Senvion was, you have carried a very detailed and thorough due diligence. So my question is what the reason is for these additional charges and whether the Senvion integration is progressing as expected. Thank you very much.
Yes, I may. There are two elements. Yes, we before the merger or before the acquisition of Senvion, to the extent possible, we did a due diligence of the business. That is our duty anyhow. Nevertheless, the full access to the projects, the full access to the sites, and the actual situation of the contracts, how they are performing, can only be assessed after the acquisition, and so we do. And you are right, we increased in the context of the opening balance sheet exercise by, and you have picked the number, the provisions needed. And that is specifically a reflection of the situation of the contracts of Senvion. And the background to that is, in essence, that Senvion, the half year before the acquisition, certainly has ramped down the service execution of the contracts. And we do our very best, and we are quite confident to get there, but that certainly had the necessity or brought the necessity that we had to adjust our provisions on those. That is the background of that.
Okay,
so it was foreseen because you know how that one goes. You have then certain deductibles in the contract price you can claw back from the seller. So that balances out to a significant extent, but simply from a balance sheet perspective, that is the position where to reflect that risk.
So would you have booked in this quarter? It's from your point of view the end of the story. Now you're very comfortable with the shape in which Senvion is right now.
Yes, and okay. we are quite pleased in essence. We are quite.
And the second part of your question was whether the integration is going well, which I can clearly confirm. I think there's excellent learning from both sides, and now that business will be well integrated into the overall service business. That works.
Understood. Thank you very much.
And
thank you.
For the factory as well.
Yep.
It's quite worth mentioning that within 3 weeks, the factory in Vargas took up manufacturing on the first line, what is quite impressive as well.
Thank you. The next question comes from Supriya Sudramanian from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, yes. Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. Most of them have been answered. Just a couple of questions related to maybe the U.S. market as well as India. In U.S., of course, there is the recent news that PTC has gotten extended till 2021 now. How do you see that impacting nearer-term installations as well as over the next 2 to 3 years, how do you see demand panning out in this market? And second one on India as well, while understand that near-term market has been quite subdued, but what is your view or thoughts on the long-term potential of the Indian market? Thank you.
If you allow, I would like to start with India. I think the long-term potential of India is very, very, high, very clear, and India will clearly return back to the growth numbers that were foreseen in the past. I think at the moment we are going to a difficult time. Everyone is going to a difficult time in India. But we firmly believe, that's what I said, in the Indian market and just all the fundamentals in India clearly confirm that India will be one of the largest markets in the world. There's a reason why we now introduced also our new turbine there. And even with the adjusted business model, we are firmly committed and believe in India. The exact numbers, honestly speaking, unfortunately do not have at my hand, I'm sure India will play a major role also at the Capital Market Day. With regards to the U.S., I have to apologize after a few weeks moving from offshore into the total responsibility. I don't know the exact details of the U.S. market. Also there, maybe you have an opportunity to join our Capital Market Day, because the U.S. market, just like the Indian, will be the largest in the world, and position Siemens Gamesa there will be essential. But I don't know the details that you are asking for at the moment. Sorry for that.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Akash Gupta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for follow-up. And this is for Thomas. So you have talked about nearly €1 billion of sales being impacted, and I would assume most of it would be pushed out from this year to next year. Now, my question is that how should we think about margins from this sales, which is being pushed out, given, would it impact next year's margin negatively, or any comment on that would be great. Thank you.
I can comment on that one. When you think about this is missing volume in the current year, and at least partially, and that's a combination of two elements in essence. One was already missing order entry. We commented on that one. And the second element is already existing contracts simply by time delays imposed shifting into the next fiscal year. When you think about the margins of those contracts and the volume that might come back in the next fiscal year might be of a mid-range three-digit number, simply by the magnitude. That is what out of that volume, with all likelihood, is going to recover in the next fiscal year. When you then think about how that splits out, new order entries, in that sense, are not charged with anything because they are new. This is contracts we have stepped into. That is nothing specific to be concerned about. And we would expect those with normal margins and with all this activity we meanwhile apply in the onshore business, and that should be sound. Certainly for those which are already in the execution shift over, you have to digest, and I commented on that one in my last quarter communication, certain acceleration costs, and those are in tendency slightly lower in margin. But that fits into the picture of the turnaround we expect for onshore and next fiscal year. But nevertheless, it's still accretive.
Thank you.
Thank you. With this, we conclude our Q&A session. Andreas?
Yes, and,
yep. Do you want to make a further comment or any final conclusion?
Yes, thanks for. First, I would like to thank everyone for participating and also for the good questions. Of course, we go through a difficult time here, and you've seen that you asked the right questions. That is understandable. But on the other hand, in the combination of things that we see for Siemens Gamesa, the order backlog gives us quite a visibility for next year and the years to thereafter. With the success and the, somebody said, 65% leadership that we have in offshore, that continues to be the case. With the acquisition of Denmark, we have two business units that deliver. And then, of course, we have quite some work to do in onshore. I admit that. I'm not blind to that, on the contrary. But we've started so many things, and we are implementing as we speak. whether that is adjustment in our footprint, whether that's developing the new products, whether that's screening the projects so that we avoid too risky approaches. I think we do already quite a lot, and therefore that gives me quite some optimism on the foundation of our also excellent liquidity, visibility of the backlog, the things we've started. I think we are clearly looking forward to a better time. And this is, of course, hard to see maybe for some at the moment, but I'm convinced, like all people here, that this will come. And I look forward to the next events, to the Capital Market Day and other events to come. So thanks for your attention and look forward to seeing some of you.